twisting and turning, waiting for their time. It is an image perhaps evocative of Ontario's pandemic response, the rules around restrictions and rollouts ever growing and ever changing. Good evening. This has been a whirlwind few days in the province's race to contain COVID-19.
The government changing course on controversial parts of its plan amid a substantial spike in those who will soon be eligible for a vaccine. We begin our coverage with CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello. Colin.
And this was a dramatic day at Queen's Park, Nathan. There are calls for the resignation of the Solicitor General, calls for the resignation of Premier Doug Ford himself, underscoring the anger that people felt over this weekend. And today, an acknowledgement from the government that perhaps it did not listen to some of the science. After a controversial weekend, finally some clarity. The Ford government is admitting that the decision to shut down playgrounds and grant police sweeping new powers wasn't based on a scientific recommendation from the Chief Medical Officer of Health.
No, Dr. Williams recommended to us that we reduce mobility as much as possible and that we make sure that people follow the public health advice that he's been giving to us for the last year.
The Premier and his cabinet took the advice on reducing mobility and expanded on it, ordering municipalities to rope off playgrounds and giving police the power to stop people at random if they were breaking the stay-at-home orders, an order that the government says was misinterpreted.
Carding was never our intention. We did realize that police stopping vehicles was not the way to deal with it. It was more important for police to be able to break up large gatherings if people are not following public health measures.
The government was forced to backtrack on Saturday, chalks it all up to a communications failure.
It wasn't our best weekend communication-wise, and especially given how challenging this has been for the people of the province of Ontario.
But now the question is, what exactly is this government doing to curb the third wave? While the Science Advisory Table recommended closing non-essential workplaces last week, the Chief Medical Officer of Health is still undecided.
If they're non-essential, then they should be closed. If they are essential, by definition, then we'd have to look at the cost of closing those, and would that cause any harm to people who couldn't get something that was vitally necessary.
And another recommendation to give employees paid sick leave was rejected today by the Ford government in the legislature.
Agreed?
Agreed.
Heard a no.
Critics call it a failure.
It is a breakdown in government. That's what it's been. We fell off the cliff, and the government didn't have a net there to catch us, and we are still in free fall, and they are still refusing to put the net in place.
While the government didn't offer an apology, they offered this.
Have we been perfect? Absolutely not. We will not, and we will continue to make mistakes.
Mistakes that frontline doctors fear will cost lives. While we heard today from some of the key decision makers who were sitting around the cabinet table last Friday, one person we did not hear from was Premier Doug Ford himself. After that about face on Saturday, the Premier was saving face today. He did not show up in the legislature, nor did he hold a news conference. Reporting live, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
Thank you, Colin. Meanwhile, Public Health Ontario is reporting 4,447 new cases in its most recent update. That brings the province's total to more than 421,000 since the start of the pandemic. 19 more deaths are linked to the virus, putting that figure at 7,735. And nearly 371,000 cases are considered resolved.
Tonight's regional breakdown looks like this. 1,299 new cases in the city of Toronto and 926 in Peel Region. York Region has 577 new cases, with 227 in Hamilton and 205 in Durham. There are 203 new infections in Niagara and 169 in Halton Region. On the vaccination front, we're now just hours away from a sizable jump in who'll be allowed to get in line.
Mm-hmm. People 40 and over, soon eligible for an AstraZeneca shot. But already the province is dulling some expectations. CTV's Scott Lightfoot is live outside one pharmacy in Pickering. Scott, demand is high, but how is supply?
Michelle, the Premier's office released a statement this afternoon saying they had been informed that two incoming shipments of AstraZeneca may be delayed. Now, this comes just days after we heard from pharmacists saying that supply was greatly outweighing demand when it came to AstraZeneca. There were concerns that some cases of this stuff would actually expire due to lack of interest. I can tell you there was no lack of interest at the pharmacy here behind me. People driving more than 3 hours to get a dose on the night before, the day before, demand is expected to increase greatly.
Pharmacy and Walk-in can help you. So 40 and above is starting tomorrow, Tuesday.
At Super 7 Pharmacy in Pickering, the phones have not stopped ringing.
Yeah, so we have a lot of phone calls coming since this morning. The people are ready for vaccinations.
Those people are all over the age of 40, and as of tomorrow, they are eligible for the AstraZeneca vaccine.
I think it's going to be busier, hopefully. Yeah, I think more people need to get the vaccine, and I think it should be rolled out a lot faster.
Lee Wheeler is from Kingston. She drove to Pickering after having no luck finding a vaccine at home and wanted to get her shot before the eligibility expanded.
Actually, the pharmacist told me that when I called this morning because I thought I'd make the trip tomorrow, and he said, no, you're probably best to come today. I was in the truck and gone before I said goodbye.
So too did Steve Wallace, who drove 3.5 hours from just outside North Bay to Pickering today.
That's it, that's all? I've been waiting all this time for that?
All in search of a shot.
I was 1,960 of 2,700 people that were registered with that pharmacy, and they had no vaccines to give.
Several 40-plus people stopped by, hoping the new eligibility started today.
Tomorrow will be a disaster because now it's viral, this news everywhere, WhatsApp, Facebook, Insta, everywhere. So tomorrow, I think people should line up from the morning.
For now, pharmacist Manish Patel says he expects to be able to handle the increased demand.
Well, for now, the supply is good. We expect that, you know, as soon as we're getting low, we should be able to order more. Again, that depends on various factors, but we are pretty much confident that we will be able to order more.
Demand for the AstraZeneca vaccine looks to be growing along with the eligibility, but whether supply can keep up is out of his hands.
Now, most pharmacies are doing COVID vaccinations by appointment only, appointments that are booked online. A quick search of websites today showed many of the appointments across the GTA for this week were filling up quite quickly. The pharmacy here behind me on Brock Road in Pickering is only doing it walk-in style. First come, first serve, and they're going to start vaccinating those over the age of 40 when they open their doors tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Reporting live in Pickering, I'm Scott Lightfoot. Michelle, back to you.
I suspect it'll be busy there. Thank you, Scott. Across the province, the Ministry of Health says nearly 67,000 doses were administered yesterday. Nearly 4 million shots have been given out during the rollout campaign. And more than 346,000 people in Ontario are considered vaccinated, having received both required doses.
In so-called hotspot postal codes, these are the kinds of lines we're getting used to seeing. But for some in North York today, the hunt for a dose was simply too good to be true. CTV's Austin Delaney's live with more. Austin, what happened here?
Well, I can tell you right now they are out of vaccine, so this lineup outside along Driftwood Avenue that stretched forever has now just broken up. It started this afternoon. I arrived here around 2 o'clock, and there were people coming from everywhere. There had been a post on social media saying the Driftwood Community Center would vaccinate anyone from a hotspot over 18, anywhere from the city. And they came, and they waited. Some of them just didn't get one. They came from everywhere, some walking up the hill to the end of the line.
Drove out, it was about 40-minute drive.
Word was spreading like wildfire on social media.
Twitter, vaccine hunters, and they just mentioned that somebody mentioned that they take any postal code, so I'm not from this area.
The lineup quickly grew, snaking around the sidewalk, leading to the Driftwood Community Center.
Now I'm hearing different things about who it's really open to, so I don't know.
But soon the rules appear to muddy.
They let out an announcement inviting all hotspots, and now all of a sudden they're changing that halfway through the line.
People kept arriving, just as information about who qualified became less and less clear.
They said that we were okay to stay here.
Our postal code was on the list.
And then they showed us another list of postal codes, and our postal codes weren't on there. And the woman said, stay in the line.
Still, there was hope.
Pretty sure everyone in this line is from outside of this, so fingers crossed that we get in.
Desperate for protection.
This comes up, it's like a beacon of hope, and then they tell us as soon as we get there, are you honoring any hotspot? And they said, yes. So they said to tell us to wait in line, and then now literally five people in front of me, they've changed the rules, started taking away people.
But there would only be vaccines for people living in this immediate hotspot.
It's open to residents of the Humber River Black Creek community, postal codes M3J, M3N, M3L, M9M, and M9L.
Can you all line up to your left for me, please? Your left.
So as they made their way to the front, a vaccine almost in sight.
We came here as soon as we could. They said that they were vaccinating all hotspots.
Then security would check their postal codes, and without a match, they were asked to leave the line.
They've changed the postal codes from the time that we got here to this cutoff point.
How did you feel when she said no?
I took it with a pinch of salt, just wait for another chance.
A desperate race against time. And we're told the Driftwood Community Center will be open again tomorrow at 10 a.m. with more vaccine and again on Wednesday. Reporting live, I'm Austin Delaney.
All right, thank you, Austin. Also tonight, the impact of this third wave on pregnant women. The alarming numbers being reported by doctors as expectant mothers wait for their shots.
Meanwhile, CTV's John Woodward is live in Vaughan tonight, where we're learning six people were injected with saline when they were supposed to be getting the COVID-19 vaccine. John, how did something like this happen?
Michelle, workers at vaccine clinics like the one in the hospital behind me here inject salt or mix salt water, that's saline, with the vaccine before they inject it. Well, it seems as if someone forgot to add the vaccine.
COVID-19 vaccine doses are in such demand that people line up for blocks. And six people in McKenzie Health in York Region had to return again to a vaccine clinic to get another one. McKenzie Health admitting on Sunday, March 28th, six individuals received an injection of saline instead of the COVID-19 vaccine at the McKenzie Health COVID-19 vaccine clinic. Receiving a saline injection does not cause any harm. However, this should not have happened. The healthcare provider said they found out and contacted people to test them for antibodies and identify those who needed another injection.
You don't hear about this too often, probably because it doesn't happen all that often, thankfully.
Infectious disease specialist Dr. Isaac Bogoch says our vaccine wastage is very low and much more efficient than other vaccines like for the flu.
Will people have any ill effects from saline? They won't, but still it doesn't take away from the fact that people got saline injections instead of the vaccine that they should have been getting, which is clearly a problem.
Question how that could even happen.
The same thing happened to a North Carolina woman this month at a pharmacy, which had just forgotten to mix the vaccine with the saline.
She had a lot of vaccine left over. What was she to do with it? And he said you shouldn't have any vaccine left over. So that's how they discovered it.
McKenzie Health said they sincerely apologize for the error and for the uncertainty and concern this situation has caused. We have undertaken a full review of our processes and have implemented additional safeguards to prevent this from happening again.
Now, as for how this happened, you don't have to be a public health physician to realize there are six doses in each vial. You misplace a vial, you will have six doses of just saline in arms. Now, we've asked McKenzie Health if that's exactly what happened and how many people they had to go through before they found those six people. We've yet to hear back. Reporting live in Vaughan, I'm John Woodward. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, John. And our online team has more information on this mix-up, along with full details on the vaccine effort across the GTA. You can find that coverage at CTVNewsToronto/vaccines. Lindsay, it does look comfortable outside. Some not wearing jackets. How are things now?
Yeah, we made it to a high of 17 degrees today, Nathan. But now we've got a few showers making their way into the GTA. You can clearly make out this cold front. Not everyone's seeing the heavy rain just yet. There's still some dry pockets around the GTA, but that will change as we progress through these early evening hours. Winds are strengthening, too. They're coming out of the southwest and the west, gusting close to about 50 kilometers per hour around the city of Toronto. But yes, it is still quite comfortable. 15 degrees this hour in Brampton. Similar conditions at Pearson, 11 degrees on the Toronto Islands. At this time tomorrow, it's not rain showers we'll be tracking. We'll be watching for the potential for snow. We'll talk all about it coming up in your weather forecast. For now, Michelle, I'll send it over to you.
Thank you, Lindsay. The Trudeau government has unveiled its first budget in more than 2 years.
Billions more dollars will be spent on trying to get through the pandemic and on economic recovery. CTV senior political correspondent Glenn McGregor has the details.
Chrystia Freeland made a little bit of history, becoming the first woman to table a federal budget.
This is feminist economic policy.
A document that itself makes history for the enormous size of its deficits. $354.2 billion in the fiscal year that just ended, and $154.7 billion this current year.
We have to finish the fight against COVID, and that costs a lot of money.
The deficits are driven in part by the cost of extending pandemic relief benefits. The Canada Recovery Benefit will now run until late September, but will drop from $500 weekly to $300 in July. Employment insurance sick leave benefits will be increased from 15 weeks to 26 weeks, starting in 2022. For businesses, the wage subsidy and rent subsidy are also extended. Although the economy is bouncing back stronger than previously expected, the Liberal government is still spending $101 billion to stimulate it. Most of it earmarked for industrial innovation, clean energy projects, and helping small and medium-sized businesses implement new technology. But the big-ticket item in Freeland's budget, a long-promised national child care plan, modeled on Quebec's daycare system. Details will be hammered out in negotiations with the provinces. The federal contribution, pegged at $30 billion over 5 years, and once it's running, $8.3 billion each year after. There's more money for seniors, too. A one-time $500 bonus for old-age security recipients in August, and an ongoing increase in OAS payments by 10% starting in July 2022. Students will get some relief from loan payments, which won't come due until they earn at least $40,000 annually, up from the previous $26,000 threshold. The Liberals' Green Recovery Plan will see homeowners eligible for interest-free loans up to $40,000 for retrofits that reduce energy bills, things like new windows, insulation, and more efficient furnaces. The budget directs $18 billion over 5 years to Indigenous communities, including $6 billion for infrastructure.
Justin Trudeau's budget is a massive letdown for Canadians.
To the Conservative opposition, it's a disappointment that runs up the debt too far.
This budget does next to nothing to secure the Canadian economy.
On the revenue side, there is an increase to the excise tax on tobacco, $4 on a carton of cigarettes beginning tomorrow, and a new tax of a yet unspecified amount coming on vaping products. A new 10% luxury tax will apply to high-end cars and personal aircraft valued at over $100,000. And there will be a new digital services tax of 3% of revenues on online companies that sell to Canadian customers.
This budget is very likely the last the Liberals will table before the next election, so it is also a political document. And if the opposition parties decide they all can't support it, that campaign will begin before the summer. Glenn McGregor, CTV News, Ottawa.
For months, it's been a familiar call from workers and health experts.
Paid sick leave, particularly for those who have no choice but to go to work during this pandemic. CTV's Beth McDonnell is live with more on that front. Beth.
I'm at one of dozens of workplaces in the GTA dealing with an outbreak of COVID-19. And there has been a lot of frustration and anger, both from doctors treating patients, as well as community advocates who have been calling for paid sick days for some time. Across Ontario, there are workplaces with outbreaks and employees who don't get paid when they stay home sick. Poultry inspector Enoch Villa is one of them.
Every day, we work with stressful because you don't know who's beside you.
An outbreak was declared here March 29th. The company says five active cases remain, but Villa is far from alone. Toronto reports 357 cumulative outbreaks at offices, warehousing businesses, shipping and distribution, construction and manufacturing, followed by 65 in food processing, 59 in retail, grocery and malls, followed by bars and restaurants.
It was infuriating.
Friday, the Ontario government announced new restrictions, but nothing for paid sick days. The Jane Finch Community Family Centre says 2 to 3 days would help many and adds 30% of workers in its hard-hit area are also on public transit. Some share images to show what it's like.
They do not feel like they have the option of staying home because if they miss one day of work, they may not be able to buy groceries.
The cost between critical care and staying home is stark. The daily average cost of a patient in ICU, more than $3,500. A minimum wage worker makes about $114 a day, $570 a week. The science table advising the government also wants action.
People should not have to choose between keeping food on the table and keeping others safe by staying home.
People living and working at Jane and Finch welcome the support.
In a pandemic like this, if you don't have money to survive, then what are you going to do?
I think that they have the responsibility to help.
Villa says workers should be paid.
The government have to work with the company to help us, because if the company have to give us money, the company going to lose too.
He recently stayed home and lost wages because of a situation at his child's daycare. Maple Leaf Food says since the pandemic began, it's offered a top-up to workers to the government benefits. The Premier's office says today that if workers need to self-isolate or are sick, they can access benefits through a federal program. But advocates say that that program can take months to get the money out and workers need it in days. Reporting live, I'm Beth McDonnell.
Thank you, Beth. Still ahead, the trial against Derek Chauvin coming to a close. Now, George Floyd's loved ones, an entire country and beyond, await the verdict. There are alarming numbers being reported by one Toronto hospital tonight regarding the percentage of COVID-19 patients in intensive care who are pregnant.
Doctors say there's been a sudden spike in severe symptoms among expectant mothers who are still waiting to be eligible for the vaccine. CTV's Natalie Johnson reports.
I blame the government right now for not prioritizing pregnant people.
Sasha Wittes-Libin is 17 weeks pregnant and says she lives in fear of catching COVID-19 while she waits to be prioritized for a vaccine.
I think it's time, based on the ICU rates and how sick people are getting.
And that's because pregnant women who are catching the virus now are getting far more sick than they did during the first two waves of this pandemic. Doctors at Mount Sinai are sounding the alarm. 30% of patients in their main ICU are pregnant or immediately postpartum with COVID-19.
It's heartbreaking and devastating to see young, healthy individuals who are coming in and deteriorating very rapidly in front of our eyes and ending up unable to speak or breathe. And ending up on a ventilator.
Doctors say the spike in severe symptoms among pregnant women has been sudden and that expectant mothers appear especially susceptible to the variants.
Requiring ICU admissions and mechanical ventilation, high levels of oxygen, and not just the pregnant person needing support, but because if you're getting so sick, it's not safe for the pregnancy itself.
The Ontario Society of OBGYNs tweeted today that Ontario's ICUs and delivery rooms are overwhelmed with pregnant women with severe COVID-19, calling for the immediate prioritization of pregnant women for vaccination to protect them and their babies.
Obstetricians have had to do a cesarean section in the ICU, on the ICU bed, in order for mom to be appropriately treated.
When you have pregnant women in the ICU, you have two lives at stake, of course.
The health minister said today that her government did not have plans to move pregnant women higher up in the vaccine priority list, but that
if a woman's physician, primary care physician, believes it's important to immunize her quickly, then of course we would follow the physician's advice.
But the Ministry of Health did not respond to CTV News' request for clarification on whether that meant that some pregnant women could get the vaccine now. As expectant mothers wait for word,
why do we not matter?
On when they can get protection while particularly vulnerable to this virus. Natalie Johnson, CTV News.
They are the people families trust to take care of their young children.
Many early childhood educators still waiting to find out when they'll be getting their vaccine. CTV's Janice Golding reports.
Beaches Montessori School is running at full capacity. Early childhood educators, who of course have been deemed essential, taking care of other essential workers' children.
We know that we serve a big purpose. We just can't believe that there hasn't been any priority for vaccination.
Education staff in high-risk neighborhoods in Toronto and Peel are now able to get their shots, even though students are doing online schooling. And yet,
we're still open and still coming to work every day. With children who are not masked, they're too young to wear a mask properly.
Early childhood educator Sandra McDonald says there's virtually no way to maintain social distance in her line of work.
I could have four kids, children on me at any given time, but they need that nurturing.
And she says she feels backburnered given the sector has seen a huge spike in cases. The province's own figures indicate there were 97 new COVID-19 cases today. That's 67 children and 30 staff. And in the last 2 weeks, 1,140 cases have been reported, which is just under 24% of all confirmed cases.
It's hard to feel 100% safe.
Meanwhile, nearly 10% of childcare centres currently have a confirmed case, with 2.5% currently closed.
25% of all childcare centre closures due to COVID-19 in the last 10 months have occurred in just the last 2 weeks.
When questioned about this in the legislature on Thursday, the education minister pointed to a $234 million investment in infection prevention measures.
That includes the cohorting of children in groups of 10 or less every day.
But Carolyn Ferns of the Ontario Coalition for Better Childcare says that has not been the case since September.
Provincial government moved childcare back to full
ratios and group sizes to pre-COVID levels. The maximum group size is actually 24.
And she calls Lecce's misapprehension insult added to injury.
And it's making them feel very unsafe.
In a statement to CTV News today, a spokesperson for the Ministry of Education said, our commitment is to get every single childcare worker in Ontario vaccinated as soon as supply becomes available. Quite frankly, we need more vaccines from our federal partners to deliver on this urgent imperative. But at Beaches Montessori School, staff say the government's response is not good enough.
I'd say, do my job for a day, and then maybe you'd have a different thought.
The ask is really big for our staff, and the support is very poor.
Janice Golding, CTV News.
Meantime, while most teachers adjust to another round of online learning, there are some people still reporting to schools.
And there's also a sense of confusion over their eligibility for a shot. CTV's Sean Lethong has that story.
Schools are closed. Students are at home. But not for everyone, as some educators are expected to teach in-person class starting tomorrow.
Now, with the numbers going so high and the state of everything, I'm terrified.
Stephanie Kuchma is an educational assistant for students with special needs at Bruce Trail Elementary in Milton. She, along with some coworkers, are considering a work refusal.
I'm just at a loss with the disconnect. Like, if it's not safe for one, it shouldn't be safe for all.
I worry about my health and my colleagues' health, as well as my students' health and safety.
Kuchma and Noel work with students aged 5 to 8 years old, and the students do not wear masks.
I love my students. I absolutely love my job. I would do anything for them, but we're talking about people's lives.
So as in-class educators become more fearful, the president of the Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario says it's time, no matter what the class, to shut it down.
We don't know why this government is not shutting down schools completely until all education workers can get vaccinated.
Both Kuchma and Noel won't get a vaccination until April 27th and May 1st, respectively. In a statement, the Ministry of Education said, a key recommendation of experts in the special education community was to ensure the most vulnerable kids who cannot participate in remote learning can continue to benefit from routine and consistency in class, coupled with the continuation of strong health and safety measures. We have followed that advice, supported by the Chief Medical Officer of Health, to ensure a small number of the most exceptional children can receive the care they desperately need.
Our students are more than capable of learning online. It might not be an ideal situation, but I don't necessarily think it's ideal for any student.
They just hope something will change soon. Sean Lethong, CTV News.
South of the border, the Derek Chauvin trial is now in the hands of the jury.
Both the prosecution and defense have wrapped up their closing arguments as the U.S. braces for the verdict. CTV's Raheem Ladani has been following the trial and joins us with more. Raheem.
Well, Michelle, this case comes down to two key questions. Did Derek Chauvin cause George Floyd's death, and were his actions reasonable? And today, both sides made their final plea to the jury. With the city of Minneapolis on high alert, George Floyd's family and allies gathered for prayer.
Whatever way this verdict goes, we won't stop till the laws change. Amen. And the behavior change.
Inside the courtroom, the prosecution delivered its closing argument in the Derek Chauvin trial.
This wasn't policing. This was murder.
Calling 38 witnesses throughout the trial and arguing Chauvin used excessive force when he pressed his knee into George Floyd's neck for more than 9 minutes. The prosecution says Chauvin heard and ignored Floyd's cries that he couldn't breathe, and that a reasonable officer with his 19 years of experience should have sized up the situation better.
This use of force was unreasonable. It was excessive. It was grossly disproportionate. It is not an excuse for the shocking abuse that you saw with your own eyes. And you can believe your own eyes.
Chauvin's attorney countered, saying what happened before his knee went on Floyd's neck is just as important. That Floyd's heart condition and drug use contributed to his death, and that Chauvin did what he was trained to do.
You cannot take a single frame and draw conclusions. You have to look at the totality.
As his attorney spoke, Chauvin took off his COVID-19 mask for one of the very few times in front of the jury, of which he only needs one to believe the state hasn't proved its case beyond a reasonable doubt.
It's not what could the officer have done differently in these circumstances. The standard is, what were the facts that were known to this officer at the precise moment he used force.
Meanwhile, outside the courtroom, businesses are boarding up, the National Guard on standby, bracing for similar protests that erupted last spring over Floyd's death.
The 12-person jury is now deliberating, and there's no timeline for when we could get a verdict. Chauvin has pleaded not guilty to second-degree and third-degree murder and manslaughter in Floyd's death. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Raheem. To some heart-pounding video from India, and we want to let you know everyone is okay. A man pulling a child off railway tracks just in the nick of time. The child had fallen onto the tracks in Mumbai just as a train was coming into the station. Seconds later, a good Samaritan sprints to the youngster, managing to lift the child, look at this, onto the platform and then climb up himself seconds before the train barrels past. The incredible video was posted by India's Ministry of Railways, which later saluted the man's exemplary courage. That's him right there in the blue shirt. To something else that's quite impressive. NASA's $85 million Mars helicopter was considered high risk, high reward, and today it paid off in a big way. Ingenuity completed the first powered flight by an aircraft on another planet.
Our team has been working over 6 years, some even longer, towards that dream of experimenting the first ever flight at Mars, and this morning our dream came true.
The experimental chopper spent 39 seconds airborne, spending almost all of that time hovering at an altitude of 3 meters. Flight controllers declared success after receiving data and images from the Perseverance rover. This was the first of many planned Ingenuity flights. Future helicopters could serve as scouts for rovers and eventually astronauts.
Still ahead, a celebrated summer festival officially canceled. It's another blow for music fans and the local economy. Those details coming up.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, lumber prices continue to soar during the pandemic due to increased demand from renovators and home builders. The cost for some materials has tripled over the past year, and prices are expected to remain high into the year ahead. I'll have my report. That's just ahead.
A lovely spring day to start off our week, but over the next couple of days, it is going to be looking and feeling a little more like winter. So hopefully you enjoyed 17 degrees. We've got a sharp cold front that's going to move through tonight. That's what's bringing us the rain. It's also going to drop us down to a low of about 1 degree. We'll say goodbye to that area of low pressure. It will be dry during the daytime hours tomorrow, but then the next system is brewing for Tuesday night and into Wednesday. And yes, this is the one that looks to bring us some snow. We'll give you an idea of how much is expected at this point. CTV News will be back in 2 minutes.
Home renovations are getting a lot more expensive due to the soaring cost of lumber, and there doesn't seem to be any price relief in sight.
The cost of some of the most common building materials for popular projects like decks and fences has tripled over the past year. Pat Foran has our story on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Nathan and Michelle, many people stuck at home during the pandemic have decided to renovate their houses inside and out. Lumber yards are running out of wood, and contractors say the high cost of materials is making many projects a lot more expensive. As soon as a lumber yard gets a shipment of wood these days, it's being loaded back on a truck to be shipped somewhere else. Demand and prices have been increasing since the beginning of the pandemic and show no signs of slowing down.
When I'm getting shocked, I can just imagine what the consumer feels.
Chris Black with Century Mill Lumber says if you want the most popular sizes, they're hard to get and increase in price month to month.
It hurts you as a business to have to say not only no, but number two, I don't know when I'm going to get it. And number three, I don't know what the price is.
Kitchens, fences, and decks are all popular home renovations, but it's not just demand driving up prices. Some sawmills had to shut down during COVID, disrupting supply chains. The Ontario Forest Industries Association says mills are doing what they can to catch up.
Lumber mills are running as hard as they can, but the reality is, in Ontario, you can't just flip a switch to increase lumber production.
New home construction is also driving demand, and increased lumber costs are expected to add thousands to the purchase price of a new home.
Lumber prices are the highest they've ever been and certainly the most volatile they've ever been.
Forest Economic Advisors, which does forecasts for the lumber industry, expects prices to remain high throughout the summer and into the fall.
If you are going to build a deck this summer, you should be looking at paying about three times more for your lumber than you would have paid 2 years ago.
A lot of consumers keep saying, oh, I'm going to push it off till next year. I'm going to push it off to next year. There's a strong part of me that wants people to know that it's never going back to what it was, unfortunately.
And those in construction say the shortages are not just in lumber, but with many other building materials as well. Drywall, plumbing, and electrical supplies are also in high demand, which could cause more delays and higher prices. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
Comfortable conditions right now, still 15 degrees, but you'll notice the clouds rolling in and there's the potential for showers this evening.
Right, and even snow in a few days, you say?
Yeah, so tonight the story is the rain. As we make our way through tomorrow, it will be a dry day, and then it's tomorrow night, overnight and into the day on Wednesday that you'll be wanting to dig out those winter boots once again. I know it is the latter half of April, but we've been pretty spoiled so far in March and April. Let's see how this one is going to shake out. Weather is brought to you by Train. For home comfort, cooling, and clean air, it is hard to stop a train. We'll begin first with our story of tonight, which is after a very mild day that brought us some sun and a mix of sun and cloud, we're now dealing with showers and heavier bands of rain along this cold front. It's all part of a low pressure system that's really situated to our north, bringing snow to northern Ontario. With this cold front, we are going to see the temperature tumble through the night tonight. Parry Sound looking at an overnight low of -2, -1 degree in Owen Sound. We should hover just above the freezing mark in Toronto, and then tomorrow will be a cooler day, about 10 degrees cooler, in fact, than it was this afternoon. And winds will be coming out of the west. They'll be quite strong as well. So our next system, it's still developing stateside. What this one's going to do is it's going to make its way toward us here in the lower Great Lakes. Again, a dry day tomorrow. By tomorrow evening, and especially late evening, overnight into Wednesday morning, that's when the snow is expected to begin. You can see just how widespread it is. But really, you have a better chance of experiencing snow along the 401 corridor and south as opposed to communities further to the north. Right now, it looks like Hamilton over toward Niagara could end up seeing the most significant snow just because of geographically where they are. This is all going to clear out as we make our way into Wednesday evening, but it is possible that a few centimeters of snow will accumulate here. This gives you a general idea, maybe about 3 centimeters of snow in Toronto, maybe about 5 in Niagara, but if things shake out a little bit differently, there's still some uncertainty with the track. Some areas could end up seeing even more snow than that. The rest of your 7-day forecast looks like this. Still cool on Thursday. Friday is the day I'm looking forward to. Sunshine and an afternoon high of 14 degrees. And it looks like we'll be a little unsettled next weekend, but hey, at least it will be mild enough for rain this time. That's your 7-day forecast. Stay with us, CTV News. We'll be right back.
Returning to our COVID-19 coverage and the vaccination effort in Peel Region.
The city of Mississauga offering a new way to expand access. CTV's John Musselman reports.
The lineup stretched around the corner at the Paramount Center. This is Mississauga's largest vaccine clinic. Everyone here has an appointment to get the shot.
It's really good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's saving our lives, you know. Mm-hmm. So everybody should get their vaccination.
Really relieved. Mm-hmm. That I finally can have an opportunity to do it.
I'm glad that I had the opportunity to take the vaccine.
Yeah, anxious and excited as well.
Why?
To be safe, you know.
The line was long, but it moved quickly. Security and staff made sure people were ready with their health card when they reached the entrance. The city of Mississauga is also offering a shuttle service from the Square One Transit Terminal to Paramount Center. Being operated by Mississauga Transit, and it will run every 40 minutes. It wasn't busy today, but this is the first day of the operation.
One, I don't drive, and because it's a straight route to the Paramount Foods vaccination clinic.
The shuttle service will be offered 7 days a week, coinciding with the clinic's operating hours. Meanwhile, a sense of relief from people today who lined up and got the shot.
The more people get vaccinated, I think we'll go towards the herd immunity.
We have to save ourselves and others too, you know. That's why we get the vaccine.
I've always been okay with it. I've followed the protocols. I feel a little safe for sure.
Get the shot, just get this life back to normal.
More than 311,000 people in Peel have received their first dose. John Musselman, CTV News, Mississauga.
A man police say has been stalking Taylor Swift was arrested after trying to break into her Manhattan apartment. Officers were called when someone spotted the man in the singer's Tribeca building without permission Saturday night. 52-year-old Hanks Johnson was charged with criminal trespass and released on his own recognizance. Police say he claims Swift is communicating with him on social media.
One of Ontario's biggest music festivals has been canceled. This summer's Boots and Hearts Festival north of Barrie will not happen. Organizers say ongoing COVID-19 restrictions make it impossible to go ahead with the concerts. They were scheduled for the August 5th weekend in Oromandante. Country music stars booked to appear included Dan and Shay, Sam Hunt, and Eric Church.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Man's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
After the break, a soccer standoff explained new drama developing overseas and what a potential split could mean for players now caught in the middle.
Carding was never our intention. We did realize that police stopping vehicles was not the way to deal with it. It was more important for police to be able to break up large gatherings if people are not following public health measures.
Updating our top stories, the provincial government trying to explain its weekend backtracking on granting police new powers to stop people who may be breaking stay-at-home orders.
So we have a lot of phone calls coming since this morning. The people are ready for vaccinations.
Starting tomorrow, anyone in Ontario 40 and over will be eligible to get the AstraZeneca vaccine. But already there are concerns there won't be enough supply to meet the demand.
We have to finish the fight against COVID. And that costs a lot of money.
And today's pandemic budget is widely seen as an election document. There will be more than $100 billion in new spending over the next 3 years. But Canada's debt is expected to surpass $1 trillion for the first time.
Don't forget to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know.
Those are some big figures being thrown around in the federal budget.
Canadians now trying to make sense of the numbers and how they hit home. And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by co-anchors Nick Dixon and Reshmi Nair. Reshmi, you've got a one-on-one interview with Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland, along with leaders of the Conservatives, NDP, and Green Party.
Yes, you're going to hear from all of the federal leaders on CP24 tonight, Nathan. And we're going to talk about this budget. The Conservatives are worried that Canadians are being left behind. The NDP doesn't think the Liberals are targeting the right demographics. We're going to get into all the numbers because the criticism is there isn't enough money to handle and deal with the problems ahead of us. But there are a lot of tax dollars to discuss. So that's coming up on our show this evening.
And Nick, the premier has been getting lots of criticism for his handling of the pandemic. You'll be talking to a columnist who's calling for Doug Ford to resign.
Yeah, the Washington Post columnist David Moskrop is going to be joining us this evening on CP24 tonight. He wrote a column that was one of the most read columns in the Washington Post over the weekend about he effectively eviscerates Doug Ford and his record in the pandemic. We've also got Dr. Abdu Sharkawi joining that panel. He is also calling on Ford to resign. CTV News infectious disease specialist and a political strategist Amanda Galbraith will join us to round out that panel and let us know if any of these calls will have any effect over at Queen's Park.
All right. Thank you, Nick and Reshmi. CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was down, closing at 79.97 U.S. American benchmark oil slid 25 cents a barrel to close at 63.38. And the TSX Composite Index was down, closing at 19,204. To the business of sport now and what UEFA calls a spit in the face of all soccer lovers. The governing body of European soccer is leading the opposition to a proposed new Super League. 12 clubs are planning to form the breakaway league, and it would eventually include some heavyweights such as FC Barcelona, Manchester United, and AC Milan. FIFA has warned the new league won't be recognized by them. UEFA says players and teams could be banned from its competitions, and the British government insists it'll do everything possible to block the league.
After the break, exploring the Royal Train Tours of Canada, a new online event being offered as a local museum remains closed.
It's it's time now for Toronto Together and the latest offering from the Toronto Railway Museum with a royal twist.
A new online event's been announced as a source of historical entertainment and a way to support a nonprofit. The Toronto Railway Museum is launching a virtual lecture series with the first installment focusing on the Royal Train Tours of Canada. It's in honor of the Queen's 95th birthday and a way to raise money for the museum, which has been forced to stay closed because of COVID-19.
We've been thinking differently. We're looking at ways that we can strategically secure revenue that, you know, is affordable for families. It's been very important to the museum to maintain an affordable ticket price.
The Royal Train Tours of Canada lecture is set for this Wednesday from 6:30 to 9 p.m. VIP tickets are $25 and come with a Zoom link. General access on YouTube is set at $10. Not bad.
Mm-hmm. Let's check in on the weather situation. Are you seeing the rain now, Lindsay?
Yeah, we've got showers moving into most parts of the GTA, with the exception of communities just along the shores of Lake Ontario. The showers are headed your way, though. These are light in nature for the most part. Some heavier bands are situated more so in through Huron County at this time. Winds are a little bit gusty out there, so if you are venturing out for an evening stroll, hold on to that umbrella. The winds are coming out of the southwest. Our temperature tomorrow will be cooler than it was today. 7 is what we're calling for. And then once again, we're looking at some snow into the day on Wednesday. Not a lot. It will likely be wet and slushy. Improvements are expected as the week goes on into next weekend. Well, ahead of that, Friday, it's going to make it feel like that snow was a distant memory because it's a pretty good looking day overall. That's your 7-day forecast. Michelle and Nathan, over to you.
Thank you, Lindsay. And be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 Tonight with Rashmi Nair and Nick Dixon begins momentarily on CP24.
For Lindsay and all of us here at CTV News, have a good night.